Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, they don't call it human resources at Google. They call the department people operations. We'll talk to the head of people operations at Google, Laszlo Bock, about how employee-employee relations work there and his 21st century theory of work. Also today, David Graeber, one of the architects of the Occupy movement, on why we crave bureaucracy and at what price. But first, the controversies over standardized tests continue to grow in New York State, now that a new law pushed by Governor Cuomo will have teachers evaluated even more on the basis of those tests than ever before, while more parents are realizing they can opt out of those tests for their kids. With us now is the chancellor of the New York State Board of Regents, Merrill Tisch, who is proposing some tweaks to the law, but also telling parents she thinks opting out is a bad idea. Chancellor Tisch, welcome back to WNYC.
Wonderful to be here.
So the governor was pushing for a full 50% of a teacher's evaluation to be based on their student standardized test scores. Was that your idea originally?
No, that was not. From what I understand in reading the budget language, and we've read it a couple of times now at the State Education Department, nowhere in the new law do they actually say 50% based on state tests. So my feeling is, and if you listen to the language that the governor's office has been using, they describe the role of the State Education Department here as purely administrative. However, when I look at the budget language, I see enormous opportunity to have conversation across this state with teachers, principals, superintendents, and parents groups about where we've been, where we need to go. There is an opportunity here. I am sure that at the end of our work, there will be criticism from every end, and I'm sure in particular we will not manage to satisfy the appetites of every single interest group. But our job actually is to satisfy the educational outcomes for students, and that is going to be what we focus on.
What the governor and the legislature agreed on wasn't a number per se. As you said, 50% was the governor's language in the run-up to the law. What was actually in print in the law is a framework that, if I have it right, says any teacher who gets an ineffective rating based on student growth on the tests, on that category of their teaching, cannot get an effective rating overall for that year. So in a way, that's more than 50% based on the test, isn't it? A solely determinative factor of a teacher's ability to be rated effective overall.
Again, I would say we are just beginning to look at this. I'm not really quite sure. I listened very carefully to the language of the legislative leaders, particularly Assemblywoman Nolan, Chairman Flanagan at the Senate side. I think, quite frankly, everyone is all over the map here. They are looking to us to bring a grown-up's perspective to a very complicated issue. And as I said before, Brian, I am going to tune out the political noise, and I hope that the State Education Department will be able to become the table of reason to manage this in an appropriate way so that educators feel good about it, parents are informed about it, and the system is allowed to go on and put all of this noise and nonsense behind them.
And parents, teachers, principals, district superintendents, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. At this confusing moment where there is a lot of noise after that law was passed on the issue of standardized tests and evaluations in New York State, for the Board of Regents Chancellor, Merrill Tisch, 212-433-9692. So continuing with what happens next under the law, the legislative leaders have been saying you and the State Education Department now have to come up with exact percentages and how to actually interpret and implement this framework. But in Capital New York today, there's an article with the headline, Education Officials' Role in Evaluations Appears to be Limited. And the governor seems to be saying that it's merely an administrative function. You're not going to have much power to decide on what policy this actually will turn into. Where are you on that?
Well, one place I am for sure on is that this has been set up so no matter who we disappoint, it's our fault. I would remind everyone that the State Education Department has been in existence for a very long time, and the Board of Regents has been in existence for a very long time. And quite frankly, we are in a position now where I think there has been a lot of angry talk, a lot of angry rhetoric. I think ultimately we can have the opportunity to calm the waters. As I said before, Brian, there is no perfect answer to any of this. I happen to believe that we need in place a multiple measured system. I believe that teacher input is important. I believe actually student input is important. I believe observations from principals and superintendents is an important component. However, at my core, I truly believe that an objective measure needs to be baked into this pie somehow. And that objective measure that we have, for better or worse, and I understand people are against testing, et cetera, we need an objective measure, and that objective measure is a state test. I would also remind your listeners that New York is in a unique position. Most other states in this country are now being forced into two national tests. New York State took the opportunity over these last several years to build our own state tests. And that is particularly why I'm very interested in curtailing this opt-out movement, because in order for us to be able to have a viable state test, we need a viable number of students in every district showing up to be tested. We need to have valid and reliable state assessments. In the absence of that critical number, we will be forced, unfortunately, and I truly believe unfortunately, to adopt a national test. I don't believe that testing is going away as the reauthorization of the federal law is going to be enacted. So it's here to stay.
Well, why wouldn't we be better off in New York State using one of the national tests? One of the arguments for the whole testing juggernaut, if I could call it that, of recent years was the comparison that took place maybe a decade ago between the United States and other countries and how we were falling behind as a nation. So the idea, I thought, was to look at the international testing standards, which revealed to the U.S. to be behind in math and science especially, and come up with some very standard measure by which students and therefore teachers could be held accountable, you know, to lift up the entire level of education in the United States. Why would it be better then to go our own way as one state with our own set of tests?
Well, let me remind everyone that New York was a leader in developing those national tests. So we very much had our oar in the water there as those tests were developed. However, I truly believe that these tests are just embarking now. New York has kind of led the way here. We have our kids adapting to Common Core. We have our teachers being prepared to teach to Common Core. We've had a change already in going from the old test to the new test. I'd like to give these national tests a year or two to roll out to see what the kinks are in them before I would subject New York students and New York teachers and New York parents to yet another change. I would also like to take this opportunity to remind a lot of our listeners that many states, panicking by the thought that they were going to have to use the national test, have approached New York to see if they could borrow New York's test. So, you know, there's a lot of anxiety in the field about this. And believe me, I think change is very hard. Changing a large bureaucracy is really, really hard. I think we're on the cusp of something important. I think it's going to take a decade to fully implement and get it right. But I believe that we needed to move the standards to a 21st century competency-based standard. And I think we're headed in the right direction, even though there's a lot of noise right now.
Let's take a phone call. Mark in Brooklyn, a public school teacher, Mark?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for calling. You're on with Chancellor Tisch.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Love the show. Chancellor Tisch, great to talk to you.
Wonderful, Mark. Thank you.
So I'm conflicted. I mean, there's one thing that I do have to challenge that you said, and I'm sorry this is going to be somewhat heated, but, I mean, the idea that New York has a good reputation for creating tests, I mean, you know, with the Pearson debacle and the Talking Pineapple debacle, like, I just don't think that New York has a reputation for making good tests. But that's sort of an aside. I'm conflicted because I feel like teachers have sat and watched this testing juggernaut be created and have always felt sort of powerless to do anything about it, you know, especially since we can't strike. So the viable alternative, right, has come to be this opt-out movement. And as someone who does feel that we need to push back against the testing juggernaut, it seemed like a good option. But I was having a conversation with, you know, a colleague of mine, and she said, well, you know, if everyone who's opting out is privileged and in the suburbs, how does that affect, you know, our students who are probably not going to take advantage of the opt-out movement and are in the city and are going to, you know, deal with these tests anyway?
Mark, let me just ask you as a teacher, and if you're teaching more urban, more high-poverty kids, which I guess
absolutely
is what you're suggesting, yeah, do you think that more of those parents should opt their kids out of the tests? I'm asking
yeah
you. Mark, I'm asking
yeah
you.
Do you? Yeah. And I want to be clear, this is not about my teacher evaluation, okay? I support observation, I support accountability, I support teachers working hard in the classroom. This is about the effect on kids, for me.
Chancellor Tisch, talk to Mark.
Mark, I want to, first of all, I hope I didn't claim that New York makes perfect tests, because I've never seen a perfect test, so that was not my intent at all. I want to talk about the opt-out movement and why it's deeply troubling to me, although I respect every parent's right to do whatever it is they're going to do. There are a couple of things at work here. We talk about income inequality. We talk about children in the gap. There is no question in my mind, but the income inequality is directly tied to students in the gap. The only way that we have to identify the numbers, the percentages, the locations, the lack of access and opportunity for these students in the gap who fall into this income inequality trauma that we are all living through is by having an objective, standardized measure by which to account for every student in the system. In New York State, over the last 2 years, when we published test scores, we published by the results of ethnicity, the results of location, the results of gender. We have broken this down in every way. Our results scream to anyone who looks at them carefully for the needs of access and opportunity for students living in our high-need districts.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say one more thing, Mark, and I don't want to seem like I'm fighting with the teachers' union. I actually have very good working relationships with the teachers' union. But I would say if they come out here, as Karen McGee at NYSET has, for opting out.
That's the statewide teachers' union.
I would say, why are you for, if you're representing parents, why don't we talk about parents whose kids don't have a choice than other to go to a failing school or to have a teacher that hasn't, you know, been effective
yes
or prepared effectively? If it's parents' rights, let's put it all on the table in terms of parents' choice. Let's not just pick one thing and say we want parents to have a choice there. So it's a very sensitive issue, and it's a very complicated issue, but I do appreciate everything that you said, Mark.
Mark, can I ask you a question based on what the sure chancellor just said? I think, and I'm interpreting your words a little bit, so tell me if I'm misinterpreting them, but that the standardized testing movement is maybe more than anything to bring up the bottom, to make sure that kids in East New York or wherever are being measured by the same standard as kids in Scarsdale or wherever, and to make sure that gets raised based on accountability. Teaching in an urban district, does that make sense to you based on your experience?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. By the way, I grew up in Scarsdale, so I've seen both sides. And I actually went to high school in Atlanta, where there wasn't such an emphasis on standardized tests. I mean, I remember we had graduation exams, and I remember sort of being told 1 week, okay, you have to take these, and thinking they were a joke, and obviously passing them easily, which is totally different to the experience of an urban educator, where we think about these tests every single day. And I guess, so like I said, I'm not against raising standards. I use the Common Core in my classroom. I was a Common Core fellow. I designed Common Core curricula. What I'm against are these high-stakes tests that have real consequences for our kids. If they can't pass them, they can't graduate high school.
Right. And Mark, I'm going to leave it there. Chancellor?
I would just say, Mark, you know, one of the things that we did was we built a large safety net around the implementation of the standards and how they impact graduation. So it's not until 2022 that a student has to meet the Common Core standards for the purpose of high school graduation. So this is going to have a long lead time, but it is going to change practice. You yourself are a Common Core fellow. You know how important the curriculum is. You know how important professional development is. I mean, you could probably write the textbook. So I know who I'm talking. I've learned by listening to you, Mark. I know I'm talking to a really substantial teacher, and I want to thank you for your practice, for your service, and for your devotion.
And I thank you for your call. And we're going to go to another caller for the New York State Board of Regents Chancellor Merrill Tisch. Cindy, a teacher on Long Island. Cindy, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Good. What do you teach?
I teach history. I teach on a school in Long Island, and I teach 8th grade. We're an 8 through 12 school. I teach an 8th grade social studies course. I teach World Honors 9, which is a precursor to AP World History. And I teach also Global Regents 10th.
I didn't expect such a thorough answer. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, you know, I didn't expect a call, but I'm listening in the car, and I listen often. And I think there's so many issues here, of course, and we're all very passionate, and we're very concerned about our children and concerned about ourselves as professionals. I think there is a lack of understanding of what it's like in the trenches on a day-to-day basis. I have loved teaching for 30 years. And what we are seeing is, my concern is mostly about the stress level that I see not only with the increase in exams, and of course, I completely agree with Chancellor in terms of some objective way, of course, to know how our students are doing. But in the classroom on a daily basis, regardless of socioeconomic level, I truly believe that we are seeing tremendous psychological damage. And I see this each day, the pressure and the time that we are taking to prepare children for the exams is taking away from things like, I love debates, I love trials, I love the kinds of things I've had time to do in the past. And my students are away so many hours of the day for exams. They are stressed before them, they are stressed after them. It takes downtime to come down, and we need to remember what it's like every day in a classroom. Nurturing and loving and taking time to read and taking time to do. We've done Common Core. I've done that before it was called Common Core. Reading and close reading. So my concern is from a passionate point of view of how our children are going to be in their future. And we don't want to quantify everything. Education is just not a business.
Cindy, I'm going to interrupt so we can get a response. And she seems to be raising two major concerns. One, we shouldn't be quantifying everything. It's taking time away from more qualitative teaching. But also the stress level, even in what sounds like it's a very high-performing school that she teaches in the suburbs with a lot of AP classes and things like that, the anxiety level is being raised so high.
You know, I think the anxiety is a direct result of the rhetoric and the anger and all of the language that has been used from school boards against superintendents and superintendents against principals and all of these.
By the rhetoric, not the reality? She said she's reporting on the experience on the ground. You don't think this is the reality that the parents and the students primarily and the teachers are experiencing? It's just from reading the news?
It's not just from reading the news. The rhetoric and the language and the tone of how people talk to each other, work with each other, address each other is really very heightened. I want to talk about teaching to the test. Years ago, when we had the old state tests, I remember going from school to school and hearing complaints. We have to spend so much time getting the kids prepared for the test. So I truly believe that no matter what the benchmark is, whatever the test, a natural tendency in some classrooms, not all classrooms, because I've seen the opposite behavior as well, is to teach to the test. The new Common Core standards were developed really to move away from teaching to the test, to really adjust thinking about what it is we want students to be able to do that permits them to be ready to compete in a 21st century world. And that has to do with interpretation, that has to do with integration of concepts, that has to do with more than producing rote memorized facts and figures. So that is the developmental nature of the new standards. As for stress and pressure, I cannot tell you how that disturbs me, but I truly believe that if the adults in the situation and in the room started to work with each other, calm down a little bit, I think the stress levels would be greatly diminished. The stress that is caused just by the rhetoric alone, I think, is very hurtful to instruction and academic achievement.
Did I read correctly somewhere that you're proposing that districts that have high-performing students in general might not need to be under the same teacher evaluation rules?
Yeah. So one of the things that came up in my year of listening when we did all those forums across the state is, as the evaluation was coming on, was I would go from classroom to classroom, district to district, and I would see, and I'm not just talking about high wealth districts. I am talking about middle income districts. I am talking about districts with students have high levels of poverty. You would see people doing extraordinary work. And it dawned on me that one of the things that we do for charter schools is we allow them a lot of freedom within state regulation, not just from union contracts, but from regulation. And it seemed to me that some schools and some districts had really what I would consider really outstanding evaluation systems in place already. Why force them to tinker with what has been producing results for them? So I think that that is something that I would feel comfortable to look at. I believe some of my colleagues on the board would feel comfortable to look at this as part of our overall report at the end of June.
It would come out looking like it was based on race and class, even though you just explained that that's obviously not what you're trying to do with a proposal like that. But it's easier with an easier population in the high wealth districts to have a lot of high performing students. And so those are the ones who are going to wind up being exempt. And that's going to look like a certain thing.
I want to say something. I want to disagree with that. Years ago, a superintendent in one of the lowest performing districts of New York State made a really important point. He said to me, Merrill, when one of my teachers takes his student from level one to the beginning of level two, that is really hard work. When one of my teachers takes a student from high level three to low level four, it's hard work. What we have now is an accountability system that looks at student growth. How are the students doing? And therefore, I would say, you know, the federal government recognizes across New York State several dozen schools and districts every year that they call blue ribbon schools. That is a real conglomerate of schools, every socioeconomic type. Those schools are doing something right. They are getting real growth from their students, and they are getting a real performance evaluation from their teachers. What teachers and superintendents and districts also said to me was, Merrill, we don't need help with evaluating our teachers. What we need is help removing a low-performing teacher. That's where the problem is in some of these districts.
So how much of a problem is there with low-performing teachers? Like, what percentage of the teachers do you think in the state need to be removed and can't be removed under the old rules versus the demoralization that's taking place out there And, you know, what might be dissuading a lot of young, creative, talented people from wanting to go into teaching because they think they're going to be turned into human widgets.
When we started with evaluation, when we accepted the Race to the Top money several years ago, the idea behind the evaluation was to create differentiation. In other words, we had hoped to that a solid core of maybe 15-20% of the teachers would fall into a category called developing. In that developing category...
Meaning not so great.
No, meaning you're on your way, you just need very targeted professional development. And so if we could have created a cohort of teachers that fell into developing and we were able to target all the resources. We spend a lot of money on professional development in this state every year. I would like to ask, where is it all going and what are the results we're getting for that? That's a different question. But if we targeted them, we know that we can create effective practice around delivering Common Core. And so when 97 or 98% of the teachers fell into effective or highly effective, without that differentiation, we weren't able to target professional development. And that was the issue with the original formula.
But the law that passed, if I read it correctly, or the interpretation of it correctly, if a teacher is not rated, if a teacher is rated as developing on her student's standardized test scores or his student's standardized test scores, developing is the best rating that they can get for their overall performance. Is that a proper level of weight on that?
We will see. You know, I've had four or five looks now at this budget language and what our role is going to be. I happen to believe that not one teacher in this state has yet been let go, to the best of my knowledge, because of anything having to do with evaluation. We're going to see. This is not going to be an easy task. It's not going to be an easy drill. As I said before, everyone is angry. Everyone's upset. Everyone is claiming different victories. But my focus, and I think the State Education Department's focus and the focus of the Board of Regents, is going to be on the students and the teachers in their classroom, calming the waters and getting everyone back on the same page so we can stop fighting and become more productive.
We will see what happens. Stop fighting, more productive, goals everyone would support. Meryl Tisch, Chancellor of the New York State Board of Regents, thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up next, Inside the Report on how Rolling Stone magazine blew the University of Virginia rape story. Stay with us.